You are listening to a Science Actually production.
Did you read the paper today?
No.
No? Where did I put it? Stuart! Bring in the paper!
All right, Hen! Heed! Paper! Now! Move that melon of yours and get the paper if you can. Hauling that gargantuan cranium about. I'm not kidding, that boy's head's like Sputnik. Spherical, but quite pointy in parts.
Well, that was offside, wasn't it? He'll be crying himself to sleep tonight on his huge pillow.
Hey, Mom, I find it interesting that you refer to the Weekly World News as the paper. The paper contains facts.
This paper contains facts. And this paper has the 8th highest circulation in the whole wide world. Right? Plenty of facts. Pregnant man gives birth. That's a fact. There it is, look. This. Mrs. X, the honeymoon murderer. She marries men under fake identities, and then she murders them. Now, she's murdered 3 men already. Look, victim number 1 was a lounge singer. Victim number 2, a Russian martial arts expert.
No.
And she's also killed a plumber named Ralph Elliott.
Everyone's healthy.
Pass a COVID test before we can record this remote
meeting. Yeah, I'm healthy.
Yeah. Can I... May I start with a plug right away? Because I'm on your show, so I have to remind people that I'm from Talking Ass. I'm shortening to ass so that people know it's a donkey.
Yeah. I'm out.
Primarily people's show, but we dabble in other topics as well, and you can find us on all your favorite podcast platforms, Spotify, all that stuff.
And, yeah.
What else? We're not brought to you by Science Socks yet, but we love wearing them. The next guy. We're brought to you by eview.eu. They make scientific and attractive websites. You know, that's kind of like science, isn't it?
Yeah. Science adjacent.
Yeah. That was like a segue into you guys now. Do your thing. Find you.
Well, we like long walks on the beach, holding hands. Come on. Skipping never hurt anybody. Skipping just makes smiles. What else? Yeah. Oh, you mean about the show? The show. Sorry.
Yeah.
You meant.
Okay. We met on a dating platform. That's true. But there's a show here as well for you.
We are, yeah, very, very fortunate today to be doing another crossover episode with the Talking Ass, or it's now going to be Ass, the Ass formerly known as Talking Ass podcast. Mm.
It's just the second word that's shortened.
I wrote in my note talking asses. I pluralized it. I think that works.
Oh, well. Okay. Yeah, see, because the American ass just becomes like filthy business, something to do with the behind, the derriere. But ass is a donkey. It's a strong animal, you know?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's a workhorse. Well, workhorse.
Mm. Yeah. I would like the cults to come together, because you guys have a cult following and I have a cult following. And, you know, if we get 100% overlap, that would be nice. But I don't want any of that business to go on that if two real-life cults met in a field. Whatever they get up to, we don't have to do any of that. We can just talk about aliens and stuff.
Yeah, like a weird contest. Who can shave our followers' heads faster? That'd be awesome to see. Yeah. Who has the best Kool-Aid? Mm.
I mean, speaking of aliens, I feel like I've seen UFOs pop up in some of your recent episodes quite a bit. It seems that either the guests or the host or their followers, is that what your cult wants?
Well, Yes and no. First of all, it's what I wanted. Okay, we just a little plug here. In season three, the first two episodes, go check them out, then explore other things. But there's the most recent season three guest was Joey. He's a pilot and like a drone, commercial drone delivery expert and stuff. But he's seen UFOs. And I guess a lot of people who are in the sky have seen them. So that's why we're here today, is because I want to know a little bit about like the serious astrophysicists who think there are aliens, right? You know?
I mean, it is important for me to always start these conversations off by saying that, like, anything can be a UFO if you're really bad at identifying flying objects.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah.
But an important caveat.
But I mean, this guy who brought it up for the first time on our show, he is a pilot, and, you know, they have things that they immediately take out their phone and check all the pilot apps, and they look whether there's anything. And if there's nothing that explains it, like Starlink, they have apps that show where the satellites are, then they have apps that show all the air traffic in the region. And then if nothing explains it, then they go, okay, I don't know what this is, right? So that's
so of
why
course I have to be. Absolutely, it has to be. Yeah. I checked an app. It's not on the app. Aliens. That works.
I mean,
the logic is sound.
Yeah.
This was kind of like the next apparently logical step that you guys took in your episode with your Peruvian friend.
Oh, that too.
I'm blanking on her name. Right? This idea
Nazca
that like...
Nazca lines.
Yeah, like the Nazca lines, or like anything that was built in a way that like we can't explain how it was built or why it was built or who built it. So, aliens?
Must be.
I almost got into a car accident because of that episode. Because it was about Peru. And then all around the freeways here, there's some kind of Peruvian festival, and they put signs up on the like little handheld cardboard signs along the sides of the freeway. I don't know how they got there, but I am desperate to pull up alongside one and take a selfie of it and send it to Danny to show that I like his show and the Peru's here and I appreciate it. But I tried to pull over once, and there are many, 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 many horns and some screeching, so I said no.
Yeah. I think Susanna was more excited about the alien aspect in that one. But now, I mean, I don't have another explanation for a lot of the things in Peru. But Tupac was exciting for me.
Tupac was great. That was funny.
Was named after a real Peruvian hero.
I didn't see that coming. Great.
Yeah.
What did he have to do with it? Nothing.
That was pretty cool.
And also, I love to trick people, right? Make the title as clickbaity as possible, and I put AI art where the rapper Tupac is shaking hands with an alien, and at the end of the day, we were just exploring Peru. Right? It's got nothing to do with either. Yeah.
You got to bring the people in with exciting titles, and then once you've lured them in, that's when you hit them with the science.
Yeah,
that's what you got to do. But I think Oh, sorry. Go on.
Go ahead. Sorry. No, you go. I talk.
No, you. No, I know you.
Yeah. I was gonna say I had a listener feedback recently that was discussing like my lack of focus on topics, that I'll tease something, and then 2 weeks later, I've forgotten about it, and then we're just doing a random episode on Peru. Like, there's no focus. I teased you guys on a bonus episode with the radiant Sylvia. I said that we would have some science, but I didn't say any more than that because sometimes recordings don't work out and stuff. I've now learned my lesson. But I've teased all kinds of stuff that I want to talk about, and then just now.
I'm still looking forward to an in-depth Scientology episode. It was in the mail bag, grab bag, something episode. Yeah. I'm like, yeah. And you mentioned us, which made me all gaga in that episode.
Yeah.
But then, no.
In the are we related to the Scientology episode? I have nothing intelligent to say on Scientology.
I think we have a lot in common with them for the first few letters, Cyan, but then after that, it just falls apart.
Well, you guys are back on my show by popular demand, actually. Like, that's really? Got nothing to do with Scientology or anything. No, no. The when you appeared, people liked it, and it got loads of listens, actually. You were fighting up there with the trans wrestler and the schizophrenic for, like, most interest on the internet. Yeah.
Take that, third grade teacher. I made it.
Oh, my God. I need to write that down. We're right up there with schizophrenic.
All of my elementary school teachers who said I'd never amount to anything. That's, you know,
yeah.
That's how I know I've truly made it.
Yeah.
It's good to know that people are interested in science. And I think that honestly, there's somewhat of an issue sometimes that, like, you know, people get too focused on speaking, preaching to the choir, so to speak, right? Like, you know, if the science podcasts only speak to the people who already care about science, mm-hmm. then you're not really doing outreach. It's in reach, you know? We have to reach people in your audience, so on.
Exactly. It's true. Trust my audience to be dum-dums, but curious dum-dums, you know? So they'll find you. I hope they. I
hope they'll find us, because I am also a curious dum dum. That's why I have Kavi with me to correct me when I make my dum dum mistakes.
Yeah, I listened to all the scientists you've had on. Like, they go such the lady about the bees and stuff. It was like, wait, I will never ever in my life know anything to the level that, like, I might know, like, the song lengths of my favorite albums, maybe, as well as she knows, like, science. Yeah. Very impressive.
Oh, we're going to have her back, because she left us hanging with so many cliffhangers about bees.
The thing behind the scenes, we were like, I was talking to her the day before the episode and trying to figure out, like, what topics we were going to hit. And there was so much back and forth, and then ultimately we didn't hit any of the topics that we were planning to. We just got so deep in, like, this general world of everything that's interesting about bees that we didn't even touch, like, the specifics of her work. So that is going to be a very interesting part two.
That's good, because that's probably what's going to happen now, because I wanted to, because Benjamin messaged me about Finnish baseball. And before we get into
aliens, I have notes. I have questions. I have notes.
All right. Shoot. Like, we have nothing. I mean, people have been aching for more information about this game, I think.
I'm just online baseball. And I'm going through my feed, and then all of a sudden baseball comes up, and I will watch baseball. I'll stop for baseball.
Okay.
I'm expecting some kind of miraculous play or something. And then the announcers are speaking, I don't know, in a language I just don't understand. I'm like, okay. I've watched Korean baseball. I've watched Japanese baseball. I'll watch whatever this baseball is. It's baseball. And then I realize it's the best way I can, from watching, I don't know, I think I've watched easily a couple hours worth of Super Pesis, or whatever you pronounce it, Finnish baseball. But my understanding is this. This is how best I can figure it out. Some Finnish people were in the United States, and they went to a baseball game on accident, and they fell in love with it. And they said, when we get home, we're going to play baseball. But they never took a photo. They never took notes. They never bought a handbook, nothing. They just showed up, and they went home, and they said, guys, we saw this game. And everyone's like, tell us about it. Well, there was this home plate shaped thing. I don't know what it was for. You know what? Make the whole field look like that. And then there were people there with bats and people there with balls. Like, what do the bats look like? I don't know. Make something. Done. And then when people hit the ball, they just ran anywhere. And they were very happy. And I was like, and extremely. Like, that's it. That's the whole game. That's the whole game. Run anywhere you want. Be happy. Lots of jumping up and down.
It's much like the Finnish it's much like the Finnish school system. It's like run around, be happy, right? That's the stereotype.
I love that. I love that. Yeah. And I'm not trying to poo-poo Finnish baseball. Maybe a little bit, but it they're having a great time and everyone's cheering and having a wonderful time and having fun running the wrong way. But okay. Yeah.
So what happened is you're very close to the truth, because what happened is I'm taking this. I learned this story 25 years ago, maybe, or 30 years ago. So I'll try my best. Back then when they brought baseball to Finland, the guys who went to America were actually like the best athletes in the world. Finland for a while was a powerhouse in like Olympic sports. You can go back and check like per capita medals in the Olympics. Finland is up there in the top three, if not on top. And it was especially long distance running, but often these guys were like multi-sport athletes and stuff. And they were invited around the world to just do exhibitions to raise local people and stuff. And I think one of the guys or some of the people who brought baseball to Finland were in America on one of those trips. And what they thought is, you know, in baseball you have pitching, right? Which is the ball is meant to come at you and then you whack it, just like in cricket or whatever, all these back games. But they got it a little wrong. They thought maybe that was a little violent for Finnish people. So the pitch is straight up in the air instead. They pitch it like mile high in the air and it falls down at terminal velocity. See, science, I know. 9.81 meters per second squared, right? Works. Yeah?
Yeah.
I know science. I'm even wearing a scientific t-shirt. It's a stellar t-shirt. There's a moon on it. Look, so yeah. Anyway, they pitch the ball straight up in the air. It falls down, and then you whack it. And the bases are set up completely wrong compared to American baseball, but the rules are pretty close. And they made it the national sport in Finland, and it still is today a weird, messed up version, like misunderstood version of baseball. Hockey, ice hockey is much more popular, right? In terms of audience numbers and TV contracts and stuff. But actually, that weird baseball is still the national sport. And it's not like in America where, like in big cities, people spend the day at the ballpark. In Finland, it's purely in the sticks only, pretty much. Kids have to learn it at school. And then at the professional leagues, it's mostly like in tiny communities in the forest, you know, not in the big cities.
So nobody gets paid big bucks to play Finnish baseball.
No, from what I read, it's like an okay salary, like from a corporate gig standpoint. There's no real, like, even the superstars get maybe, I think, 100,000 a year or something. So it's not like ridiculous.
Exactly.
Coca-Cola's not saying, hey, we got to get these Finnish baseballers on our cans and t-shirts.
Exactly. And there's no big sneaker sponsorships or anything. And maybe the worst thing here, like to really poo-poo the game, is that nobody from that version of baseball, to my knowledge, has made it to the big money leagues elsewhere, America or Japan, playing real baseball. So I think that says something about the game. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, even with different rules, I feel like different versions of football, and I'm not talking about soccer, sorry, but like between NFL, Australian Football League, AFL, and Gaelic football in Ireland, like there are players that go between those sports, because even though the rules are vastly different, there are a lot of, you know, it's high level athletics, and there are skills that are transferable between them.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like here.
The guys who are good at
that's not the case.
The guys who are good at dodging and running can play running back anywhere, and the guys who are good at kicking can kick either ball. Those two positions at least tend to work across the sports, right? From rugby to NFL to Australian football.
Mm. So this whole thing seems like it's reminding me of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, right? Which was a Japanese martial art / sport, depending on who you ask, right? That influenced people in Brazil. People in Brazil said, okay, cool, We like that. We're going to make our own version of it. And that version is, you know, has been to varying degrees super popular over the years. And this seems like the opposite happened.
Yeah, it seems like in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, I'm not an expert on fighting sports, but they took, in both countries, there were earlier, like in Asia and then in, which is a continent, not a country, I know. Don't start commenting now. Don't start with the comments.
We've been cancelled.
But from the Asian martial arts, and the Brazilians had also these more like, they're more ceremonial and they don't work in real fighting, right? Like they like have capoeira. Also karate and judo are mostly ceremonial, right? And then they just combine, they took the stuff that is actual fighting from both worlds and made like the ultimate thing that now, I guess, if you want to be a, if you want to be a cage fighter, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is what you need to know, right? Plus boxing and wrestling, yeah.
I guess, yeah. Speaking of fighting, Avi Loeb, right? This guy has been causing a stir. I know this is the topic that you really wanted us to talk about, but the fighting that has been going on in the scientific community about this guy has been probably for 6 or 7, maybe even 8 years, these shenanigans have been going on. And I know I have my perspective as someone in the world of astrophysics, but I'm curious how, Danny, you see this guy, and then maybe, yeah, Benjamin, like if you also agree or disagree with whatever Danny says, I'm curious.
Go for it.
Yeah. I mean, for those who don't know, there was that sighting about a month ago of a large, I mean, tell me, if is it an object or just a large shadow? What are they actually observing? And then Avi Loeb is the big guy, everything is aliens. And the tabloids picked it up that he said this could be an alien spacecraft. And I was shocked that on my podcast and more widely in the world, and I like to think that my podcast is a lens into the wider world, but I was shocked that people weren't more either afraid or interested. It was one day on the news and that's it. And then, I mean, I guess the guy always claims that everything is from aliens, or you tell me.
It's, yeah. So the thing that they found,
was an alien spacecraft. And then with this new one, the comet something or other that's passing through at the moment, or just left, I don't know where it is.
3I Atlas, I think is the name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's coming through from outer space, out of the solar system, outside our solar system. It's just coming through. So, you know, it has to be an alien craft.
Yeah. No.
It's not slowing down, changing direction, sending out a signal, nothing. It's just zipping through as things in space do.
So, but
since it's close to us, it's got to be an alien.
Yeah, I guess all the this guy has made kind of a career of this, of always trying to see if there's an alien angle. Or what's the fight then? What are the quote-unquote mainstream scientists saying then? What are these
things? So, yeah, okay. So I think there are two things that need to be, you know, like in there's this weird sort of cognitive dissonance, because this guy is a mainstream scientist, or at least he was. Like he was a cosmologist, a high-energy astrophysicist, basically like dealing with like, you know, massive scale things in the universe, or like really high energy things involving black holes, or like it's high level stuff, right? And he held various positions at Princeton, at the Institute for Advanced Study, and then at Harvard, and then he became, I think he was the chair of the astronomy department at Harvard until 2020. You can say, if you just look at his CV, at least until a couple of years ago, like this is a mainstream scientist. The problem is that science is a huge field, and astrophysics is also a huge field. And so being an expert in one area of science does not make you an expert in every other area of science. And the same thing goes for astrophysics. And I think that most astrophysicists would agree with me. Like, you know, I work on radio astronomy. I work a lot on stars, a little bit on supernovae. Ask me about planets. Like, I don't know a lot, right? I maybe I know more than the average human being who has never, you know, thought about planets being different to stars, right?
You but can name all the ones in our solar system, right? What are they called?
Yeah.
Cancer, Aries, Pisces.
T-Rex. No?
T-Rex. Yeah.
So I think that there's this like weird case with Avi Loeb is the fact that he is an intelligent guy. He does have the credentials in astrophysics in general. But what he's done the past few years is started like leaving his lane and going into these other areas of astronomy or astrophysics and like making these bold claims without the bold evidence to back them up.
Okay. But he did find, like, before these sightings, he found some kind of orbs that were these, like, balls made of uranium and shit stuff. So
the sphere rules thing?
So basically, he has set out to try and prove that, you know, the rest of mainstream astronomy is not trying hard enough. And so he's had all these different expeditions to try to, you know, really like actively look for evidence of alien life. And so one example was, I think off the coast of Papua New Guinea, maybe I'm wrong about that. You can fact check me, but basically off the coast of somewhere he didn't have permission to be, he was doing this expedition, picking up these what he called metal spherules, basically like tiny metal balls off the ocean floor. And the idea was that his claim was that based on the shape and location and composition, these things had to be not just, you know, from outer space, but from outside of our solar system. And there were a couple of problems with that, besides the fact that he didn't have, you know, local permission to be there. The evidence for the location was basically he was taking this like fireball event, so like a meteor or something crashing through the atmosphere. And he said, oh, we have, you know, seismology or seismograph data that says there was a big bang here, and that corresponds to where we found these little metal balls. And their chemical composition indicates that they're not just a regular thing. So the latter people who do work in this field and, you know, work a lot on tiny space rocks and comets and meteors said, no, the chemical composition is perfectly normal. And other folks found out that the seismograph that he was relying on was not set off by a fireball in the sky, but by a truck passing by. So
that's unfortunate.
Yeah. And this latest one, like, you know, they say if it looks like a duck and quacks like a duck, like it looks like a comet and it quacks like a comet. So these claims that it could be other things, you know, there were like people joking that, oh, well, if it's an interstellar alien spaceship, that, you know, the windscreen got dusty on their drive over, that's why we're picking up so much dust. Like, no, the physics that we know suggests that we would see dust cloud sort of things around comets. So
yeah.
It's a weird situation that I don't think the nuance of it is quite getting to the mainstream, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And in his defense, that makes a lot of sense. So we're not immediately expecting an alien invasion. But in his defense, we talked last time about people who didn't get credit, especially female scientists. He did give credit to his intern, Bergstrom, I think she was called, who was actually doing the scraping of the ocean floor or something instead. And he said it in an interview, and I thought that was cool. You know, at least we've learned our lesson from the DNA guys who were too drunk in that pub to mention
that is really cool.
Yeah.
I think the flip side of that is he has taken under his wing a lot of undergraduate students and like grad students who are really early in their career. Mm. And these students now, or as you know, they've gone on to become, you know, early career researchers. Their names are forever going to be tied to this research. And some people might look at that work and it, you know, depending on where they're applying, it could be detrimental. So like, you know, I know that when I publish a scientific paper, I want to be able to stand behind it. And I want to, you know, scientists get things wrong. Sure. That's fine. But I feel like there's a way to go about things and I can at least stand behind my methodology every time. It feels like the people who, what's that?
No, just going to say, it sounds like, because Joey was very adamant to go back to our pilot who had seen some stuff in the air, that in that community now, all the shunning, what you're saying is that in the scientific community, it's much more still judged if your name is associated with alien research. Whereas with pilots and stuff, they're now encouraged to report anything they see that they can't explain through normal piloting skills and experience.
I would push back on that a little bit, and to clarify maybe, your name being associated with Avi Loeb on one of these papers, where you're basically pushing up against, you're saying, let's forget, you know, the past 100 years of astronomy research on this particular topic of like what space rocks look like, and let's just assume that it's not a space rock, but it's an alien spaceship, right? That sort of search for aliens, I think, could be detrimental to people's careers. By comparison, I know a lot of people who have done work at SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, right? The SETI Institute, which is based out of Hat Creek in California. Like a lot of serious people, whether it's like Jill Tata or Shanoa Tremblay, who he had as a guest a couple seasons back, or Wehel Farah, who's recently finished up his position as project scientist on like some of these searches for extraterrestrial intelligence. Like these people, there is absolutely no shunning of them, at least from what I can see, in the scientific community.
Yeah. Well, that's good. What about the stuff about the people who look into radio waves, and there's like some really early recordings of radio waves from outer space? Is this nonsense or is this real?
I mean, I hope it's not nonsense, because that's the majority of the science I do is radio wave astronomy.
Yeah. No, I mean specifically alien radio waves, or like stuff that is from, that is radio signals that are coming from out there somewhere.
That's exactly what SETI does. I mean, they've gotten some criticism recently that they're too focused, if anything, on the radio waves, right? Because what radio astronomy does is you try to like look for radio waves coming from space, and if there's anything weird that's not like, you know, a natural object like a star or a galaxy or whatever, you have algorithms that are designed to help you like clean up and calibrate, and like maybe if it's like radio frequency interference from somebody's cell phone or a Wi-Fi tower or, you know, a bloody microwave that's going off near the observatory, which has happened before, we try to identify those things, right? We try to figure out like these anomalous signals. And so a lot of the work at SETI has been focused in recent years. Again, you know, if folks are interested, you can go back to the episode that we did with Shanoa Tremblay. She's working on this sort of pipeline that automatically detects weird anomalous signals that are not radio frequency interference, they're not RFI, they're not a real source, and they're candidates for potentially being an alien, you know, techno signature. That's definitely a thing. Like, there are definitely people working on that. And, you know, it's a respectable area of astronomy.
Not so much a message being sent directly to us, but just a hint that there might be something there.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I'm not used to doing this in my life, but it's just a moment of a reflection there. We had like a 2 second pause there almost before I ruined it with my talking. But in the last week, in the last week alone, there I've had now conversations about with serious people who are not like crazy and are doing serious science or serious development of drone infrastructure or stuff. We're talking about life out there as if it is clearly a very serious possibility. And I've, this is, I'm sure this has happened to you guys who work with space and science all the time, or with Benjamin at least as a very serious hobby. You're like, but for me, this is a moment where I'm going, whoa, this is, there is, it's becoming now, I don't know, what is the, how would you put it in sports gambling terms? Are we, is it more likely that there is something out there or less likely?
It's tough. It's tough to quantify. I mean,
I'd bet money in the fourth book that there is life out there, but I'm not going to collect on that bet for a long time.
I reckon if you placed a bet about microbial life, like bacteria or something, on another planet, either in our solar system or on a moon in our solar system that's not our moon, or potentially on a moon or a planet in a different solar system, I would probably put money on us finding evidence of that within our lifetime. But like a walking, talking, yeah, like I know, yeah, Benjamin's like making a face. It's like, oh, la di da, but I don't know how else to describe that face for our audio listeners. But like, yeah, I don't think that's a crazy bet. I might be wrong. I don't think that's a crazy bet to make, you know, that in the next 50 years, we won't find serious evidence of, you know, biological life somewhere. But that's very different to, you know, finding guys with like, you know, massive eyes and giant bulbous heads that like look like what aliens supposedly look like from X-Files or whatever, you know?
Yeah. We don't want them to be like that, because then, I don't know.
No, because every time you see an alien in a TV show or a movie, they're always naked. I need them clothed.
Well, I was about to say exactly that. If they are walking and talking, then either humans will exploit them somehow, like that, you know, nudity related, or they'll just become some kind of annoying people who disagree with my politics or something. And then, so just better
saying,
if it's
just saying. My group.
That would be our fault. We sent them nudes 50 years ago. Of course they're going to show up naked.
Several times.
Maybe they looked at us like we're just these very loud versions of bonobos, and maybe they just looked at the way to make peace with these fellas is to arrive naked, you know.
So that's their thing. That's what they're all about. We're gonna go to this Earth place, but before you go down there, kick it off. That's their thing.
Yeah. Like, oh man, we have to. It's like, yeah, sorry, that's the only way they'll accept us. Otherwise, they'll get really scared of our fashion. I don't know. Whatever. No, there really are a lot of people who've spent their entire careers working on this. And this again is like something that, again, like I have respect for Avi Loeb for, you know, the work that he did prior to going off on this, like, only I care about aliens binge, but it's exactly that. Like, there was a talk that he was giving maybe 3 or 4 years ago. I don't know, my timeline around, you know, COVID or post-COVID is a bit wobbly, but there was a talk that he gave about his research and about the fact that, like, oh, look at me, I'm looking for aliens and I'm the only one looking for aliens and nobody else in astronomy wants to look for aliens. And one of the people in the virtual audience was Jill Tata. Jill Tata is like, you know, not one of the founders of SETI, but has been working at SETI, you know, Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, since the early 80s, right? And she has made her entire career about looking for aliens. And she asked him a question after his talk, and he basically dismissed it as like, oh, you just don't want to find the aliens. You just don't care. It's like, bro, she spent 40 years working on this. You spent 4 years doing it. You know, it's like a, you know, child has wandered into a scene and says, oh, you know, I'm going to do it now. Nobody else cares about it. This is my project. So I really do think that, you know, science and astronomy is all about making hypotheses, and sometimes they're going to be a bit more exotic than others. You know, make a wild guess, test your theories, go out there and, you know, explore the frontiers, break molds and stuff. But I also do think that there is something a little bit disingenuous about pretending that you're the only one doing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, so he might be suffering from a common common ailment amongst academic superstars, eh? It starts with E and it ends with go.
Yeah.
He's not the first one to fall into that trap.
It could be that. It could be that.
Or maybe he just doesn't want to believe that he's mistaken. You know? What was it?
Percival
Lowell. Percival Lowell, right? Percival Lowell, he's the guy who built a huge telescope. It was in Arizona or somewhere here in California to look at Mars. And he got some of the best visuals and data about Mars. But he's also absolutely convinced himself that there is an alien race on Mars. And they built this network of canals across Mars.
Oh, the canal.
Bring water from the poles to the equatorial regions because these people have screwed up their atmosphere and they need water. And it's, where do you have any evidence of any of this story? You just have fuzzy photographs. And then when the people look, these canals are just, you know, caverns and ravines and stuff that are just natural to Mars' geography.
This dates back to a mistranslation.
Huh?
No, I think if I'm not mistaken, the whole canal thing on Mars dates back to Schiaparelli, which I right? So Schiaparelli was an Italian astronomer who said there are canali, there are channels. Right, basically looking at the topography, potato tomato. He noticed that the land shape, right, looked as if there was, you know, places where there could have been particular formations that showed, you know, valleys here and troughs there and whatnot. It was that was misinterpreted as being canals. There is, it's an understandable mistake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
did they learn anything useful about Mars through this project, though?
Mm-hmm.
They were studying it more and more closely, and they started learning more about Mars's seasons, and they learned more about clouds and weather on Mars. They're able to see that there is like sandstorms and, you know, some clouds. They got a little more information about the moons of Mars. I mean, there was information coming in, but at the forefront of the mind of the person looking at all that stuff, he's thinking, these guys are starving and they need water. And so he kept trying to somehow equate everything he found to help support that that narrative.
Yeah,
which was that part was wrong.
Speaking of the surface of Mars, I did see that high-def photo that was taken by one of the things we send out there, whatever they're called, Voyager, Excalibur, whatever cool name you give it. I saw a photo and I saw the landscape and I was like, that looks like any festival ground after everyone leaves and it's cleaned up like that. Someone's looking at a real estate opportunity up there. Didn't look so bad, but then you turn on the audio of the video it's filmed, and just the winds sound like just absolute death, like pure, like that will kill you in a second, right?
Oh yeah.
It's cold. It's windy. That's about all it's got going, really.
Yeah.
Got some nice red dirt.
It's dusty and rusty.
So, yeah. But 3-Eye Atlas, whatever it's called, the big object now that the tableau's picked up, how far away is it now? How far away was it when it was in the front page of the news? Why was it even interesting?
So what's interesting about it is the fact that it does appear to be from outside our solar system, right? Most of the meteors and comets and stuff, like space rocks that come close to Earth, are generally just on like a long orbit around the sun. They go like way out past Jupiter, past Pluto, like to the edge of our solar system and loop back in, right? Long, long orbits, right? And the difference with these interstellar comets, which again, so it's called 3I/Atlas. The I stands for interstellar, and 3 is because it's the third one of these, right? Atlas is just the name of the telescope that was used to discover it. So you have 1I Oumuamua, you have 2I Borisov, and you have 3I Atlas. And what's unique about them is the fact that when we detect them moving at such fast velocities that they cannot be bound to an orbit around our sun, right? So like in the same way that there's an escape velocity, you have to move at a certain speed to get out of Earth's gravitational pull. You also have to move at a certain speed to get out of the sun's gravitational pull. And so when we see an object that's moving faster than that, it's like, okay, cool. This is a rock that's not like the rest of the rocks. This rock has come from somewhere else. And that doesn't necessarily make it an alien, but it does make it interesting because we can study by looking at a rock from a different solar system. We can see what the chemistry is like in that system, whether that system formed at a similar time or in a similar way to our solar system. It's super interesting stuff. And so what was really cool about 3I Atlas is that when we detected it kind of on the way in rather than on the way out, like Oumuamua, because 1I Oumuamua, when we detected it, we're like, oh my God, this thing just passed us. Whereas 3I was more like, oh, this thing is about to pass us. So it was at around 4.5 times the distance to the sun, the distance between the Earth and the sun is called an astronomical unit. So that distance times 4.5 away from us when we first discovered it. It's going to get as close as like 1.5 or a bit over 1 times that distance in late October. From the sun. It'll still be fairly close to Earth around October, November. But yeah, it's like it's a super cool space rock. It's a big space rock. Right, it's like several hundred meters in diameter, up to a couple of kilometers, depending on which way you're looking at it. Like, it's covered in dust. It's got a weird ice thing. This is the other thing that So Avi Loeb's obsession with Oumuamua had been for a long time about the fact that it got close to the sun and then it accelerated.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, has to be a spaceship, right? Even if it's a solar sail, a type of thing that's catching the sun's rays rather than wind, like a regular sail would. His idea was that like it was, you know, catching the sun's rays, and that's why it accelerated, because it's an alien ship. Most comets, as they come toward the inner solar system, they speed up both because of gravity, but also because of this thing called outgassing. No, outgassing is not what you think, Denny. It is instead
dirty now.
It's basically comets are rock and ice, and when you have ice and you get close to a thing that's really hot like the sun, that ice starts to sublimate. It basically goes from being solid ice to starting to evaporate some of that as, you know, water gas or nitrogen gas, depending on what the frozen thing is. And then you lose mass to that gas, and then that, you know, the fact that you're moving and you're losing material means that the rest of you speeds up. It's like pretty, And so that's what we have seen. We have seen those vapors from these interstellar objects. So we don't need an alien space engine to explain the fact that they're speeding up when they get close to the sun. They're speeding up because they're turning ice into gas.
Yeah, that does make a lot of sense, actually. Yeah,
that's what happened to me. Yeah.
Yeah, to betray my really weak understanding of physics here, perhaps, this thing is really big, and it's at closest going to be a couple of times further away than the sun from us.
Mm-hmm.
Does that affect, does that do anything on the planets in our solar system? Like, will it
like change our orbit or anything?
Rain on Jupiter or something? Or will there be any effects that we can feel here?
Unless it hits us, I don't think anything. It's too small.
It's too small. Like, I don't know the exact mass or weight of it off the top of my head.
How many elephants? Like
it's about 4,000 Taylor Swifts.
wow.
It's still passing, like, 200 million kilometers away from Earth. So it's not something that we need to be worried about. Like, it's not going to pull Earth out of its orbit. It's quite a big space rock, but it's still a space rock. It's not anything on the level of like a dwarf planet or a moon or anything like that. So yeah, I wouldn't worry about it. I think this is one of the other concerns. I'm going to stop ranting about RV Loeb, but like, you know, some people have legitimately gotten worked up over some of the claims he's made about these being alien ships sent here to destroy us. Like, Avi is, I would imagine, much smarter than me, especially on things relating to, like, cosmology. But I think that there's something that is at best ignorant or at worst disingenuous for him to have, you know, gotten all of these people worked up and afraid about, you know, impending alien invasion from this space rock.
What instruments do we have studying it? Do we have a lot of good, now that we know that it's coming instead of just leaving, do we have good stuff?
I mean, yeah, like that's exactly what we're doing. And I think that we've been able to much more quickly and easily, or not necessarily easily, but thoroughly debunk claims of it being an alien spaceship by the fact that we've had all of these follow-up observations with various Earth-based telescopes that have, you know, shown, you know, okay, based on how it looks in infrared and optical and whatever, it's, you know, it's this sort of comet and has this sort of chemical composition. I think the James Webb Space Telescope is going to be trained on it at some point soon to you know, confirm like the chemical composition. It's definitely much more useful, and I think that the part of Avi's work that is very worthwhile is this push for fast multi-wavelength, meaning like different sorts of telescopes, radio, infrared, optical, whatever, coverage of all of these sorts of things. And as telescopes get better and better, like there's this telescope that's just being finished now in Chile. It's called the Vera Rubin Observatory. Speaking as we were before about, you know, female scientists who didn't get the respect that they deserved during their lifetime. So this is named after Vera Rubin, who, you know, basically found the first evidence of dark matter being a thing. And the Vera Rubin Observatory is going to be conducting a 10-year survey called the Legacy Survey in Space and Time, LSST. And it's basically taking a picture of the entire night sky. I mean, incredibly like high resolution, high sensitivity, looking at super faint objects every single night for 10 years. It has a raw data rate of like 20 terabytes per night.
Jeez.
And yeah, it's hectic. And there are people who have already, you know, even though the telescope is just about to switch on for its like full survey, have already developed like machine learning algorithms and various like templates for matching and figuring out, okay, is this a space rock? Is this a satellite? Is this a planet, a star, whatever? Like, This is a super useful thing to do, not just because we want to find aliens, we want to find anomalies, we want to find cool things, but like for planetary defense, if you want to find a space rock that might not have been picked up otherwise and is heading towards Earth. Like, it is a super important thing that we should be doing, that we should be funding, and not just because it's cool and interesting.
Planetary defense is also, the NFL season is starting. That's also something perhaps the New York Jets could try. Can't go anywhere.
Defense.
Yeah. I love football.
I love Australian football.
Man, I do have to say, and this can serve as my public service announcement as well. You mentioned Taylor Swift. I think she made a poor choice with Travis Kelce. I think, he's let me down in so many fantasy leagues that I just feel like they might both be better off as independent artists. You can thank me for that, because now the internet will engage with this episode. They clip that.
You mentioned Taylor Swift. That's the cash right there.
Yeah. I just feel like they both do better. Yeah. They can both do better as individuals, is all I'm saying. Yeah. But
I love it.
I mean, I honestly appreciate the about. Yeah. I appreciate so much the actual explanation of how the proper projects for interstellar research happens. Why do you think, I mean, Avi Loeb is a star academic. Why do you think he is pushing it so hard, though? Is it like a, like, does he,
how much of it is vanity because he wants the press before he starts providing actual data and research to back up claims that gets him into the press?
Jesus, I'm appalled and shocked that the tabloid media doesn't report on actual research and findings versus alien.
Yeah, I mean, I could be uncharitable and you know, note the fact that some of his podcast and media appearances have been closely tied to the launches of his books. I think that you know, people can take that information as they will. But I really do think that this probably at the very least started as something that was very well intentioned, that he has, you know, made his career by looking at hard problems in science, in astrophysics and cosmology, difficult things, often requiring, you know, sometimes more exotic hypotheses. And I think that at a certain point it might have gotten away from him. I don't know. I've never met him in person. I would love to meet him in person and to hear it from him. But yeah, I can't presume to know what his actual motivations are.
Yeah. Benjamin, how does this all make you feel? Are you optimistic that that something fun will happen? Something like, not Little Green Men, but something super exciting is coming.
Absolutely.
So I feel like something big is coming.
I think we're going to find something. And like Kavi said, in our lifetimes, we'll find a bacteria or something teeny tiny that still managed to hang on, like on Mars or Titan or something like that. We've known there's ice on Mars, and then recent surveys have found liquid water under the ice, like heavily salinated, but still liquid at these temperatures, cold temperatures, water, like lakes and ponds, what? Really shallow, like 100 feet, 50 feet shallow. The fact that they can find that things under the ice that shallow is amazing to me, but they found it. And we have places here on Earth where the water is incredibly cold and severely salinated, so it's still able to be somewhat liquidy. And even there, there's small microbial life. So, I mean,
yeah.
All we need to do is, I'm going to make it sound very simple. We just need to send something there to drill down into the water and you'll find it. So, in theory, if we just send something there and find a way to get down there, we just might find something. It just takes somebody or some organization to send something.
Yeah. David Attenborough would have been a good thing to send there. You know? Even here.
I'm picturing like a Futurama style, like head in the jar of David Attenborough being sent on a future mission.
That would work. That would work.
To like one of the moons of Jupiter.
The waters of Europa have not previously been probed by human civilization.
That's good.
Yeah, or Steve Irwin, that guy would have found the answer. Crikey!
He would have found the aliens.
Yeah.
Steve Irwin would have fought it.
Yeah. We are, I should say, like, most astronomers, most astrophysicists, like, want to find evidence of aliens. Like, we are not trying to poo-poo it. We are not trying to, like, think about, like, who the audience, or who the population cross-section of people who become astrophysicists and astronomers. Like, we're all nerds. Like, we all grew up watching Star Trek and Star Wars and, like, everything. We want there to be life. We want to believe. We just also want evidence to back up our beliefs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The general population isn't super interested with incremental advancement type news. They like the big payday news. So that's why you always see science articles being published all over the place. And, you know, we discovered that we can move this an inch further. Or we discovered that we can make this a little bit brighter. And the public says, yeah, well, what's that going to do for us? But then you say something like, we discovered life. They're not going to care that all those incremental articles that they poo-pooed earlier have led up to discovering life somewhere else. But the payoff is still so huge that it's okay.
Exactly.
Just ignore that.
Exactly. Difference. I think with terrestrial events, it's the same. Like, you look at, I don't know, some adversarial country developing a new weapon or something. You'll have hundreds of people following it. They'll come out with, hey, we saw these trucks moving over here. We saw trees being cut down here. We saw new types of digging equipment here. And then, but all we care about is when the excrement hits the ventilation system and something like big happens and we have to go to war with them or something, right? That's when it makes the news. Yeah. And then obviously all the conspiracy dum-dums and stuff never actually look up the decades of evidence piling up to it, right?
No. But
there are all these signs that nobody's doing it, nobody's going anywhere for fun, whatever. Look at me navigate that topic without mentioning a country or saying anything political.
I like that. That was well, very, very smoothly done.
I like your term conspiracy dum-dums. That's nice.
Oh, yeah. The internet's full of them. Dum-dum-dum. Conspiracy dum-dum. Yeah. Hey, Benjamin, can we please do another rapid fire round? I know it's part of your format on these things, and I know I'm a second time guest on your show, but can I get another rapid fire, because that was so fun.
You want to do it again?
Oh, anything you got.
Okay. Questions of Quipples bit?
All right.
I mean, you've already seen these questions. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, I don't need the same ones. We can do it. I thought that might be a different one, but I don't want to be greedy. I got to participate in that once, so.
I think we could definitely ask you for like a soundbite comment on a bunch of different topics.
Anything.
Yeah. What would you say is your thought on the cosmic calendar? What does that phrase awaken for you?
Well, for me, it was always overstepped on by the other types of calendars I had as a teenage boy. So I, you know, my attention was drawn I had David Hasselhoff, obviously, and things like that. But yeah.
The David Hasselhoff pinup. Yep. Yeah. Didn't we all?
Other than that, my thought is maybe so much fighting has happened between humans about which calendars to use. So if we all move to a cosmic calendar, we can get rid of the Gregorian and the whatever else they're called. You know?
Hmm. Okay. What's the next? Well, okay. If aliens did come, and we had to choose David Hasselhoff to speak for us, what do you think he should say?
Oh, I don't think he should speak. He should sing, right? He was an exceptional.
In German.
Yeah. He should sing in German, because I think that would give them a nice welcome.
Nothing says a warm welcome like being shouted.
I feel like they might turn around and be like, we have over-invested in this civilization. We don't need to nothing here. We need to learn.
That would be a good deterrent. Just a nice warm greeting in German.
Yeah.
I told them we love you.
Yeah. Aliens are like, we got undressed for this.
Yeah. Isn't it funny how in the comedy sci-fi movies the aliens have uniforms, but in the more serious, in quotes, sci-fi movies, they're naked. Yeah. Or the world, they just plop out naked. In the alien abduction movies, they're just walking around naked. But, you know, Galaxy Quest, they all have nice little uniforms.
Very,
they have
very serious.
Jobs, and it's nice.
Yeah.
I have another question for you, Danny.
Oh, go for it.
Okay, if Elon Musk or someone else was building a colony on Mars, and you got to be one of 10 people going, what three things would you take with you?
Oh, I thought you were going to ask me what would I wear, and then I thought,
well, obviously you'd wear nothing. That's what
if you're the colony on Mars, that means you're the alien, therefore you have to show up naked.
Exactly. When in Rome, you do what they've always done, right? Oh, the three things I would bring with us, you gotta go with music, right? Because it's audio, and they seem to have communicated with us by radio waves, right? So maybe they understand sound, whatever. And then what music if it counts as one thing, you'd make an album. Like in America, you have the thing where they preserve culturally important things in the Library of Congress or something, right? Mm-hmm. So you pick some things that they already sort of vetted as culturally important, and then you go to a couple of other countries and take theirs as well. So that would be something you'd bring. What else? I mean, I would definitely bring a spacesuit, right? Because I can be naked under that, but we need some kind of dome, okay? And then, I mean, it's interesting. None of the things that matter to us here on Earth is relevant. Passports, money, mortgage statements, none of that matters. So I guess the third thing would be an unlimited supply of food, because I'm assuming nobody has figured out how to grow anything there. Right?
I mean, Mark Watney had a crack at it, but yeah.
He did great.
Who's Mark Watney? Is that the
guy in the book/movie The Martian? Matt Damon.
Yeah.
He grew potatoes with Martian dirt, water, and poop.
Yeah, poop. But isn't that a serious... That would be the seriously the way to survive there, is some kind of dome, and then it would be only... I mean, excrement would be the only thing you have to grow anything out of, right?
I think
a dome or a subterranean habitat, in terms of the agriculture, not my area of expertise, but I imagine that people are working on, you know, what ways the Martian soil or Martian regolith, as it's called, could be, you know, repurposed for various things.
Yeah. They have sent an album to space, right? NASA did.
An album?
Somebody sent something, a gold record, to space. Is this true, or was this in a movie?
There's two identical copies of the golden record, which is actually pure aluminum coated in pure gold. You're welcome. And it was put together with a whole bunch of random music selections from around the world. The original idea was to do a bunch of American music, but then Carl Sagan and that other guy who was in charge of the record, I forget who his name is, but they decided that it's going to represent everybody. So there's music from India, music from Brazil, music, and the American song was a song by Chuck Berry. And so there's a whole variety of stuff. And there's also audio recordings of a heartbeat and brainwaves. I don't know what the person's thinking about, but brainwaves. And then there's also...
Will Chamberlain's 100-point game, right?
Will Chamberlain's 100-point game.
And, that's a weird American
and his body count,
what?
Which was just ridiculous.
Most of the world doesn't follow basketball. And if they did, that was like a singular... I don't get it. Why was that the thing? Like, wouldn't you go for maybe, I don't know, a recording of the moon landing or something? Like, why Will Chamberlain?
I did not know that.
Put that on there, but I hope they did. They didn't. I don't think they did. Will Chamberlain was a master at free throws because he did them Granny Goose style from between his legs. And then as soon as he got wind that people were making fun of how he looked doing it, he stopped. And he would only do his free throws overhand, and his free throw rate went just in the toilet. And he refused to go back because he didn't want anyone saying he looked stupid. He could have looked stupid and made the records even greater. But instead, he decided, you know, I want to look cool and have bad numbers. Thank you. Yeah. I don't know much about basketball because it's boring. It's boring. But that story stuck with me in the midst of all the boringness in boring land. The NBA, the B stands for boring, but that story stuck with me. By the way, I don't know if anybody caught the last, 12 seconds, but basketball is boring.
Yeah, basketball. And also, I'm wrong.
Tell us how you really feel.
I don't like it.
I'm totally wrong that wasn't part of the gold record, by the way.
It was not.
Okay. I had seen Will Chip. That recording of his game is preserved in some other place, but not this. It was a different. I got my facts convoluted. So yeah, I'm happy about that because the aliens don't care. I'm assuming if they're anything like us.
There are other statistics about Will Chamberlain that were sent up on the record because we wanted to impress him a little bit. But other than that,
Well, thinking of things that are somewhat fictitious, what's your favorite sci-fi, Danny? I don't think we've spoken about this.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I never liked sci-fi as a kid. That's the problem. It's been covered. My lack of sci-fi understanding I'm a closed-minded person, right? Nerds are open-minded and intelligent, right? I was into mafia flicks and all that. It had to be things that I understand. The exact opposite of people who want to expand their mind to things they can't understand. So I'm now on a journey of trying to understand sci-fi. The things that did impress me, or at least visually, I found the recent ones, the Matthew McConaughey one was fun, you know?
Oh, Interstellar.
Interstellar. Uh-huh. And these were like, I can tolerate sci-fi, but that's what happened to me at a university as well. I arrive at this place where the best and the brightest, they say, I mean, they were all dum-dums like the rest of us, but where the best, everyone's dumb at something, right? The people who did astronomy didn't know the capital of Nigeria, and the people who knew that didn't know what an Avi Loeb or what or who that is, and that's fine. But you get into these rooms, and I started feeling so like imposter syndrome and so self-conscious because they were doing two things. Very intelligent nerds were doing, they were really into sci-fi, and they were really into watching Disney movies as adults or young adults at the time. And I didn't either. I saw the Disney as a kid, and now I have a kid, so I'm going to see them again at some point. But that's like in between. I didn't need to rewatch any of it. The other thing, like the third thing they did was Game of Thrones, and I was like, oh, and they were, oh, you study like politics and stuff like that, and wars and peace and all that. You'll love this. And then I watched it, and in the episode, there was like a dragon and incest, and I was like, what has this got to do with anything I like? You know?
To be fair, this was in England, so maybe those two particular topics were close to their hearts.
Yeah, that's true. You mean in Wales, right? Yeah. For those who don't know, Wales has a dragon on its flag, and yep. They have been known, or allegedly, to have relations with various things that we others wouldn't. Yeah.
I mean, I was talking about, you know, monarchies in general having yeah. those sorts of taboos. No disrespect to the Welsh. The Welsh are awesome. Like any language that can have a word that's 18 letters long with three vowels, they get my vote.
Oh, yeah.
I love the English language. As well, yeah. It's their language, and they set up so many rules, and they break them all instantly.
Yeah. Enough about me, though. Benjamin, I can't let us go or do anything without some facts. Science facts. What do we have? Recent favorites, fact of the day. What do you got?
Science fact of the day. Golly. What did I learn the other day?
Was it that the capital of Nigeria is Abuja?
There you go. There's that. That's not really a science fact. It's just a naming code thing.
Well done, Cody.
My son's name is Owen, and he's a little bit of a prankster. And I learned that on his birthday in 1974, he wasn't around yet, neither was I, but there was an astronaut, Owen, on Skylab 3, and he pranked NASA into believing that his wife was up there with him. He sent down a photo of his wife in a uniform preparing food somewhere in the little Skylab station that they had, and when they radioed up what's going on, his wife answered back, "Oh, sorry to get in the way, fellas. I'm just trying to make these boys something to eat before they start their day." And they were still stumped because they saw a photo, and then they heard her on the radio, and then astronaut Owen, whatever his last name was, got on the radio. "I'm just kidding with you. It was a prank. I took a photo with my wife before we left. We took a pre-recording of her voice before he left, obviously, and I just took this opportunity to send it down." So for a couple of minutes, NASA's genuinely kind of thinking, there's someone else up there? But no.
Well, there had been successful freeloaders on space rockets. Elon's rocket had a mouse on it. Is that real or was that a fake video? When there was a mouse riding...
I don't think Elon sent anything living. He sent his car. So that's a thing.
Yeah.
Well, there is a conspiracy theory about that. He sent his car.
Yeah. What's the conspiracy theory about the car?
So like there's a spaceman sitting in the driver's seat of a car.
Right. I know this theory. Yeah.
it's just like, you know, allegedly an empty spacesuit.
But
the conspiracy is like, what better way to dispose of a body than in plain sight sending it to space?
It's a rival of his or some such thing.
Do check out the video. It's a video of the SpaceX rocket. I don't think it's a real mouse. Obviously, it wouldn't survive or anything. But something is caught weirdly in the camera. If it's real, just look at it. It looks weird. It's just something.
Well, mice have been sent to space and returned safely, so it's possible. Yeah. But I don't know that a mouse got onto it. I'm going to take a look for it. An actual science fact is. There are quakes on Earth, there are quakes on the Moon, earthquakes, moonquakes, but quakes on the Earth happen and end in a matter of seconds or minutes, whereas on the Moon, since there's no geological activity, no atmosphere, no water, nothing to dampen anything, a moonquake does happen, and it just goes on for hours and hours and hours until it slowly, over time, just dissipates across the entirety of the lunar globe. Which is very nice.
Wow.
And they're not very strong. It wouldn't bother you.
Did any happen when the people were up there?
Actually, yeah, they did them on purpose. They when the Apollo fellows landed on the moon, they put on seismographs on the moon near their landing sites, and then as future Apollo missions came, they had the second stage booster that pushed them towards the moon. They aimed the Apollo capsule and lander towards the moon, but they aimed that second stage booster to at the moon as well, and it would just smash into the moon somewhere. So there's an intentional wreck, a couple of them on the moon, and the reason being they want to be able to detect the on the seismograph the impact and how far away it was and everything. And sure enough, there when those things crashed on the ground, many however hundreds miles, thousand miles away, yeah, they can feel it, they can sense it. So
that's incredible.
Trash, but for a reason. Very extreme, but whatever.
Yeah. Very hard to fake in a studio as well, yeah. Must have been a big Hollywood studio where they faked that moon earthquake.
Oh, God. I really hope it was fake, because that would be a testament to the human species to keeping a secret. The millions of people in rival superpower nations agreeing to lie.
Yeah.
Also, we had that that Starquake episode.
We did a Starquake episode, yes.
With a Starquake, I don't know if you're familiar, expert. Danny, with astroseismology.
Okay, it's the same as we covered with the moon now, but with other stars. Is it?
It's basically, yeah. So like stars can like basically increase and decrease in brightness on really rapidly, and like, you know, there are some oscillations that happen on the time scales of, like, you know, minutes. There are some that happens on the scales of hours, days, weeks, months, whatever. And like the simplest case is basically just like there are layers of stuff inside that are expanding and contracting, and so you have these changes in the physical size of the star that result in a change in brightness as we see from our telescopes. Yeah, for folks who want to learn more about that, we had an episode last season with Courtney Crawford. Maybe the season before that.
I'm looking.
Yeah, I'll have to find that one as well.
Season 6, episode 3, Courtney Crawford.
Look at there we go. Yeah.
And it's not just aliens landing their stage 2 boosters on these stars.
Not as far as we can tell.
No. Yet. Yeah. Is that...
Yeah.
I won't sleep tonight because of all the thoughts I have in my head. I'll probably have to lull myself to sleep with some Courtney Crawford or something, who sounds like a pop star, but he's a scientist, apparently. Covey, I'm going to shock you here. You know how on Talking Ass, at the end, we do have to have public service announcements. I've given mine. You gave yours last time, so you might have prepared something. Therefore, we have to shock Benjamin here and put him on the spot.
Public service announcement?
Public space announcement.
A public safe space announcement? Oh, my God. All right, public service announcement. Let's do a space. If you come across a loudmouth flat earther in public, blow their mind and just suddenly agree with them. You're right. Let them think they've made a difference. Let them put a little number in their little checkbook. We got one more. But then... don't actually believe it, so their numbers are wrong.
I don't really feel like that the internet has such a great sense of humor sometimes. Surely that's all a group of people who got together and like, this isn't real. They wanted to
a conspiracy about a conspiracy. Surely they had people had to conspire to get together to conspire that the earth is flat. The
conspiracy, let me be a conspiracy dum-dum here for a second. Yeah, I mean, isn't it likely that they thought like, let's make fun of the second dumbest people on Earth. One, number one being the people who think it might be flat with all the evidence we have. Second dumbest would be the people who get really angry when we suggest seriously that is. So I'm thinking, wouldn't it be a bunch of people from the third group who waste their time making people angry on the internet, pretending that they're in the first group of dum-dums to make the second group angry? Yeah.
That is... I'm doing math.
Yeah.
Huh. I said what one. Fraction?
What's that? Yeah. What's that movie with Leonardo DiCaprio when they're going into dreams? And what was Inception. It called? Yeah, that's the Inception version of conspiracy theory.
Yeah. There's a,
what if there's this group that really secretly got together to be this group, which really got together to make fun of that group? That's what I mean.
It's 13-year-old boys all the way down.
All the way down, 13-year-old boys. It was funny. And then I said this, and then they bought it.
Yeah. Who was it who said it's turtles all the way down? Or tortoises? What?
A really smart person?
Yeah.
It was that guy who got to the edge and looked over and saw the turtles. He got past the NASA military and to the South Pole wall. And then he looked over with his Mount Everest climbing gear and he saw
I think there are some elements of it, like I think it relates to flat earth, but I think there are also elements that like date back to like Hindu mythology of like the world turtle that we're all sitting on. I don't know who the first person to use it in this context was.
That's one of my favorite things about the flat earthers. They all agree on one thing, that the earth is flat. But then you ask one group, you ask them what's above us, then the answers are, there's a variety of answers. What's below
and
us?
All absolutely. Right?
Some people say it's turtles. Some people say it's elephants. Some people say it's nothing. Some people say it's more earths. Whatever. It's just like.
Well,
so that actually kind of supports Danny's theory that it's just a scam.
Well,
a scamming of scams.
Yeah, I think there's perhaps some strong evidence that the Earth might be an oblate spheroid.
It is an oblate spheroid.
I'm shocking you with my science words. I saw your faces. Ah!
Love it. I love it.
Yeah.
I worry, though, Danny, because at a certain point, like, you won't need us anymore. Once you learn too much about science, I think you are... You know, you pretend to be a dum-dum, but you're really secretly quite smart.
His little science fuel tank is like, still filling up.
I mean, it's an oblate spheroid falling at terminal velocity. I mean, if I said that in a flat earther conference, they would view me as an adversary and like, oh no, that was.
I would happily stand beside you and fight them.
Yeah.
My response anytime someone tells me the earth is flat, it's just like, here, I will pay for you to bungee jump off the edge. Like, I will hire an expedition. I will drive you, sail you, fly you to wherever you need to go so that you can look, you can see that there's no edge, and then you can just sit the heck down and stop proliferating this.
I think the best flat earthers are the ones who do the actual experiments to just prove it, and they end up proving that the earth is actually round. But then they think, no, something's wrong with the materials. Like, no. You just prove something that's right.
If it is flat, we know what the edges are. It's the places where no one goes. So that would be North Korea, Delaware, Wales, Belgium. I mean, those are probably the four corners.
That's probably it. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. No one's ever marketed any tourism to any of those places to me, so
there's also the Earth is growing. A conspiracy people, they think the Earth is swelling from the inside because it's creating mass out of nothing, and the proof is lakes come in threes.
What
I've seen that what? That's my that's one what? That's another one. Yeah,
wait, this but is the hurting Earth... my head.
In some places, the Earth is growing height, where the plates are pushing together and mountains.
Well, of course, that's happening. But the Earth as a whole is expanding from within because matter just comes into being. No. And if your proof is that it's as it's stretching, the crust is ripping open and that's where lakes come from. It's like, no.
You know what? No. My only explanation or answer now is just going to be that the Earth is not flat. The Earth is pudding. You know why? Because proof is in the pudding. That's it.
But dang! Also, because pudding's delicious.
That's very well done. So, because it's getting late here, can you tell my listeners again, remind them where they can find you? I mean, I would hope for my listeners not to be on any social media, that they only follow me as devoted cult members and get all their information right here. But in case they are on any social media, where can they find all your fun?
It doesn't matter where I am. Just as long as you know that once in a while, I'm on the Talking Ass podcast. Everything else is just more conspiracy nonsense. Like Science Actually on Facebook and Science Actually on Instagram and Science Actually on TikTok. I might say these things, but it's all just smoke and mirrors. I'm just some random person who shows up on the only podcast that matters, Talking Ass, once in a while.
Wearing science socks. See, I'm a professional too, wearing science socks, right?
Love that. Well,
yeah. What about you, Cody?
Folks can technically find me on all of the terrible social media platforms that nobody should be wasting any time on. I am technically there every so often, come in and out, but you can find us there. You can find the Nerd and the Scientist podcast, if you're not already listening to this episode on it, and you're coming over from the cult of Talking Ass, you can find us on Spotify, Google Podcasts, and wherever you normally get your podcasting joy. You can also see our beautiful faces on YouTube or on the TikTok if you so desire.
And right. Facebook video. That's where I watch your faces.
Oh, yeah. I started putting them all up there now. And so,
yeah. Because that place is a cesspool nowadays, Facebook. And when your videos come up, it's like a break from all the nonsense. It's like, okay, here, I'll just press on this, you know? Someone will teach me something.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So happy to hear.
Thank you so much for having me / me having you again.
Thank you.
In the most innocent way possible.
It was a pleasure to be had.
Yeah, and my show, Talking Ass, it's everywhere. Best way to go is go to the website. It transforms your life, and then you pay the very modest fee of £500 a month, and then you get for that you get me. No,
that's right.
Well worth it. It's a bargain.
That's just the intro level. If you guys want to go higher, there's a VIP package. That's just ridiculous.
I mean, I learned it from Scientology. You go, you know, you got to pay for the next level, right?
You got to hold the cans, and then poof!
Yeah, you go.
You go into the soul graveyard in Hawaii or something.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Well, thank you, Denny. We'll let you go to sleep.
Thank you. And we'll see you next time. We'll have you back to discuss the next awfully controversial scientific topic.
Or yes, anytime.
Can't wait.
All right. Thanks, guys.
See you. Goodbye, everybody.
Good night.
Well, it's a well-known fact, Sonny Jim, that there's a secret society of the five wealthiest people in the world known as the Pentaveret, who run everything in the world, including the newspapers, and meet tri-annually at a secret country mansion in Colorado known as the Meadows.
So who's in this Pentaveret?
The Queen, the Vatican, the Gettys, the Rothschilds, and Colonel Sanders before he went tits up. Oh, I hated the Colonel with his wee, beady eyes and that smug look on his face. Oh, you're gonna buy my chicken, oh!
Dad, how can you hate the Colonel?
Because he puts an addictive chemical in his chicken that makes you crave it fortnightly, smart arse.
Interesting.
Scores! Magic!
Oh, magic! 1-0!
Well, let's have a look at the replay. William, move your head. Look at the size of that boy's head.
Shh.
I'm not kidding. It's like an orange on a toothpick.
Shh, you're going to give the boy a complex.
Well, that's a huge noggin. It's a virtual planetoid.
Shh.
Has its own weather system. Heed, move!